Hello and welcome to episode 130 of What Most People Think. I am back from a week in Dubai and yeah, I'm a prick. That's where I go now. I go to Dubai. I took some lifestyle photos for my Insta. I tried to make them bad because I can't commit to these things. There was one of me on a boat. I was boasting a little bit there. But I just want to say, I hope you enjoyed that wind. Just know that it made my holiday sweeter just to see exactly. I mean, it's a dream holiday to see weather so bad. I mean, you hope for like it to be cold. You sort of think a natural disaster would be good. And look, the O2 got fucked up. So that made me feel very good. And with me and looking as she should at me at the moment for saying such awful things is Rosie Holt returning to the show. Welcome back to the show, Rosie, co-host.
Oh, wow. Hello. Thank you for having me back.
What an incredible honour that you're doing for free that really helps me and not you massively. We've got to say, like with comedians, what have you been up to? I did a couple of local radio things to plug the tour earlier, and I'd forgotten how local radio could be. So they go right back to, so the pandemic, the lockdowns, as a comedian, they sort of take you back a bit. What have you been doing? I did feel like saying, wanking myself into oblivion, just because the question was so predictable, I thought I should shock her. But I didn't say that. But I'm now going to ask you the same question. Rosie, what are you, a comedian during a pandemic, what have you been doing?
What have I been doing? I'm just putting silly videos online, mainly, I think. But the pandemic's over now, right? It's finished.
Well, we will get on to it. I'm glad to hear you talking like that, Rosie. You're talking like, the woman you portray, a good sort of British best foot forward attitude. That's what we like to hear. We will get onto that later and stuff, but it's fair to say that since you were last on, and people really enjoyed you being on last time, that they've stepped up a notch and they've brought in people, you know, sitting members of parliament that have been confused by reality and fiction, and so we will talk about that in a while. One thing I should say is that I had Russell Cain on last week, so I recorded ahead an episode before I went away, and a few people have challenged me for not challenging him enough. So I'm gonna.
Does that mean you're gonna challenge me?
I'm gonna challenge the shit out of you, Rosie.
oh great! I'm ready, and I know everything.
Yes, if you say one thing that's not right wing, I'll be like, sorry, Rosie.
What can we pick that apart?
Look, I mean, I will. I'm gonna have to just double back a second there. But yeah, a healthy disagreement will be probably as deep as it gets. So the sort of setup for today is, as I reached out to you, is I've been out of the country and you got to tell me what's been going on. I don't know. I've only got a sort of Twitter understanding of what's going on.
I can't believe you missed the storm. That's so, it's so unfair. It's so irritating.
Well, tell me about the wind. Let's do that bit here. Tell me about the wind. What was your experience of the great winds of 2022?
So the great winds of 2022, I was actually, that day, I was very out of action. I was very hungover. But it sounded intense. And my flatmate, he was going to go to work and he couldn't leave the house. And it felt a bit apocalyptic, but exciting. Mm. So actually, maybe you missed, it's sad that you missed it. Because it was, everyone came together on Twitter. Everyone got involved in Big Jet TV.
Yeah, you got to unpack Big Jet TV because
Big Jet TV was this guy who was just in the winds filming these planes trying to land in Heathrow. And then he'd be like, that one did it. Oh, great. Oh, beauty. And then more and more people were just watching it. And that was that was kind of it. But it became really addictive. And I felt like it was a really nice way of people coming together and all enjoying seeing the planes, whether they were going to land or not. And sometimes they just waver in the air for ages. And you thought, oh, how long is this going to take? And then they do it and you felt proud of them.
I mean, that could have gone wrong, though. I mean, if a plane did crash down in a massive fireball, the whole Big Jet TV thing, we'd have swept under the carpet very quickly, wouldn't we?
It would have been really sad. It would have been a really sad end to what was quite a fun little thing.
600 souls lost their lives, 400,000 bored British people.
and then the Big Jet guy would have been cancelled, and it would have been terrible.
I mean, Big Jet TV, because I saw it trending while I was out of the country, it did sound like something unsavoury. Do you know what I mean?
No, it wasn't unsavoury. It was
no,
just
but I mean like sexy unsavoury. Yeah. Like out of context, I just thought, who the hell is Big Jet Steve?
Big Jet Steve.
So I just said there, what we're tracking, we knew last time we were doing the cuss count, which was tracking the swearing. We've moved on from that because, well, it just, you know, people just got bored of it, frankly. And I resisted two attempts at a coup, but realised that even my, you know, like that bit in Downfall where Hitler realises even his closest generals have left him. That was me with the cuss count. I held in there as long as I could. And eventually I shot myself in the face and shot my dog. nothing to do with the cuss count, just did it. But we've got now the curve, because we're just trying to see how many there are from people. And you know.
Oh, no, I'm going to be really bad at that. I'm quite inarticulate, really.
As you also pulled out the word inarticulate. So I think there's the balance off there. But I mean, mainly they're tracking mine, but we do track the guest ones. From the last episode, I had one and nine you knows. That's annoying, I would say. If somebody had to listen to me do nine you knows, you'd just be like, ugh, God. Do you know what I mean? They'd have been halfway through their dog walk with their little Bichon Frise and they'd have gone, fuck this guy.
I think I preferred the cuss count. I think this is quite exposing.
it does put more pressure because the cuss count, at least you could say it was either heroic to do loads of swearsies or pious to not.
Well, this is just, when did people pause in their thinking and fail? That's what
I think
it is,
you
it?
Might have made a fairly good format point here, Rosie Holt. Yeah. It may be that the curve just slowly gets pensioned off. But I mean, one of the great things about the curve is it keeps me in touch with the super VIP Patreon who is David Domain. And he made the point, because we were talking about, obviously, Jimmy Carr being offensive. Remember that?
God, that discourse went on for a long time, didn't it? I was like, it's still trending 5 days in.
We had a chat about it, but he makes the point about Jimmy being offensive for years and why now is particularly the time. I mean, he's been in trouble before. I think that's fair, sir. I can remember there were jokes that he said at the Paralympics, or was it the Invictus Games? The Invictus Games, which is sort of like the Paralympics for the armed forces. So, I mean, that is, you want to talk about jeopardy in a joke.
Yeah.
So, he's been there before, I suppose, is the point. But I take the point about the sort of level of offence archaeology. I mean, it wasn't even that much archaeology, was it? It was in December. They didn't have to get the big old offence spades out. But he said, you know, he loves the guests on the podcast, and it's meant that he's gone out to see live people like Alan Cochran, Simon Evans, and Sue Pollard.
Oh.
Sue hasn't been on the show.
So how come she's in the list?
I don't know.
She been in the show in spirit.
I mean, what did she do anything up? Did she, was she a star? I've suddenly got this doubt in my mind that she was like an early trailblazer in alternative comedy, and then she just took the Heidi High gig for the money.
I've no idea.
You're a lot younger than me, so I'm even thinking Heidi High is not really. Do you know? I'm just looking
I have no idea. Heidi High.
You don't know what that is?
What is that?
Oh my God. That's just the oldest I've felt. Do you know, I was in a writer's room recently and I was trying to use a description for just a strong man. Like, I was going, what does he think? This is all Cockneys do, is like, or Londoners do, is you go, like if a bloke says, oh yeah, it's this new app, your mates go, what are you, Bill Gates? You know, you take it to the extreme of whatever that thing is. So I said, oh, what is he, Jeff Capes? And all the young people in the room just went, what? Like you're doing
Jeff
now. Capes. There you go. 80s strong man. And then I was like, what is it? Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then they were like, that's a bit dated. I was like, The Rock. All right? The Rock. The up-to-date strong bloke of recognition.
That's sad as well. You had to resentfully use The Rock. Fine, I'll go there. I'll use him.
I don't know if it's something about being 45, but I feel like there's a hill that I've passed the brow of. How old are you, Rosie, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 36.
So it's interesting, isn't it? Like, I got the fear then asking you, and then you just bit your own fist in your hand.
I hate it. I don't, because, I mean, I'd like people to just be like, how old is she? Maybe she's in her 20s. That's ideally what I'd want people to think.
Well, I thought you were a good deal younger than 36.
Thank you.
I mean, now I know that I might have to cut the podcast short. I don't really like women on the podcast. maximum 31, because that still sounds young.
I know, I've passed the age now.
36, yeah, well, you have to understand that. You do seem young to me.
Thanks.
That sounds like the shittiest thing that a husband would say, wouldn't it? If his wife was just looking for a bit of reassurance. You seem young to me. But it's amazing, isn't it? After all this time, we've been smashing the patriarchy for a good few years now, and yet age is still this thing for women, Rosie.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's really sad. Yeah. We're on the shelf.
You're not on the shelf, but is there an equivalence, right? If we accept that age is a different thing for men and women, maybe 36, what would be the, like, in male years?
male years, I think, for 30s, I think it's probably 46, isn't it? I think.
So we're the same age.
We're the same career-wise. We're the same age. Yeah, yeah. It's just, and also I think it probably changed. Like, what I'm trying to think of, what an 80-year-old man, what's an 80-year-old man in women years? Because I don't think it's like it changes.
Yeah, it changes. I think you're absolutely right. It changed over time because 80-year-old man is like a 95-year-old woman.
Yeah.
Something changes. I think it's around about the age of 65. Do you notice how blokes just sort of become a bit defeated in their mid-60s? And even guys that have been, like, big patriarchal, you know, real patrons of their family, they're just something, like the last bit of testosterone just drifts away down the plug hole.
So do you think it's like the menopause for men, but it's a kind of sadness as opposed to a chemical change? The sadder pause.
I've got some new patrons, some VIP patrons. So as usual, we take the piss out of their names. Fred Ford, I think that sounds like a very fat but darts player. No, I'm thinking of Andy Ford. God rest his soul, he's not with us anymore. Fred Ford, so but he still sounds like a darts player.
I think it's a great name, though. It's like fun and fast. It's Fred Ford.
Well, that comes from the alliteration. We talk a lot about this podcast. I mean, Rosie Holt, I mean, is... Holt's a really cool surname, I think. And Rosie's a really great first name. When you say your name, both of them, you have to pause a bit. Rosie Holt. It's sort of in, you have to stop.
Yeah, you have to halt.
Like, if your name was Rosie Richardson, then you'd be... Well, that's like weather girl name, isn't it?
Yeah, so true.
On GMB. And now with the weather, it's Rosie Richardson. There's a character for the sketch show we'll one day do, like a really politically biased weather girl who tries to sort of infer things with her weather predictions.
Oh, I really like that. That'd be great.
Bitter, angry, and just so clearly biased, and everyone's really freaked out after every one of her forecasts, where she says there'll be a wave of ennui coming. No, Rosie, you can't have ennui in the weather. It's not a thing. Coming over Westminster, because Boris is still fucking in power. You go, all right, Rosie. This is not part of the BBC remit.
Yeah, I want to see this.
We got Mark Strentz. That is...
How do you spell strength?
S-T-R-E-N-T-Z. Mark Strentz. Strentz, Mark Strentz. Yeah, he sounds like a muscular centre-forward for Bayern Munich.
That's exactly what he sounds like.
Yeah, Mark Strentz scored in the 15th minute with a powerful header. And obviously, the commentator was an SS officer.
Yeah.
We got another VIP patron who all get read out at the top of the show. It's part of the VIP thing that I do. Henry Piney.
I like it. I think it's sweet.
See, I bet you like guys like that, don't you? Like, just soft, fluffy-sounding guys.
Yeah, lovely. With lovely, lovely names for lovely men.
With nice jumpers.
Yeah.
That you steal.
And then they say their names quite apologetically. And they go, oh, I know it's a bit... And you go, no, it's lovely.
Well, if we're speculating, I think that if you've got the name Henry Piney, you've probably been called Whiny Piney, like, at school. So he's probably had to fight his way out of a few things. I mean, great thing would be, right, is if this was a rom-com and you met Henry Piney and you'd made those presumptions, but then he's manly as fuck. Like, he actually makes the name work for him, right? Like, the woman's all surprised at how masculine Henry Piney is.
And initially I'm thinking, no, this is not what I wanted from Henry Piney. But then I learned to appreciate who Henry Piney is. And I think, yeah, this is right. This is, why didn't I see this before? Why was I so prejudiced against his name and what I thought it would be? And then we get married.
Women always have to be confounded in rom-coms. Like, you know that thing you thought? You're fucking wrong about that.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, idiot. Look, this is what you want, love. That's essentially the point about most rom-coms. But I think that the twist in this one would be that just when you kind of realised how wrong you were, he then starts to open up his soft side and you're like, oh my God, such a dweeb.
And then I'm revolted.
Yeah.
What is this? Go back. Go back to what you were, Henry Piney. Hide it. Repress it. Repress that soft side.
Push it down. Get a few hernias. Yeah. Die young. Okay, we are going to be talking about a couple of subjects. So I think we'll keep it to a couple of subjects because we had a good old chat at the top here, as I thought we would, which is nice. We're going to talk about lifting of restrictions. Glory be to Boris. I'm sure Rosie would be fully on side with that sentiment. We might answer the question, what the fuck is going on in Canada? And then we will talk more about your clips and stuff like that. I don't really need to lay all of this out for the audience. I'm just trying to get back in the hot seat myself. But before we move on, it's a format point. A thank you and a fuck you. Have you got something you're grateful for, Rosie?
How do you say it without being wanky? I guess I'm grateful for my family. So I'm lucky. I've got a big family. I'm one of five, and we're all very close. And they all have differing opinions on things. So they're quite good to ring when I'm having existential crises. And I'm happy for that. I'm grateful.
So that's five siblings.
Yeah, well, I'm one of five. Yeah, so three brothers and one sister.
Can I guess where you are where you were born? I think you were born third or fourth.
Yes, I was born fourth. That is right. Yeah.
I can't tell you how I know that. Do you know, I've got a real skill of telling where people were born. I cannot give away my secret.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so impressive.
It's like a magic trick.
What an amazing but useless skill.
Well, it sort of briefly intrigues people. And then they realise what you realise very quickly, because obviously you're a comic, that it's fucking pointless. And the brothers older? Two of the brothers are older, right?
Yeah. I've got a younger brother, and then it's me, and then it's my sister, and then my brothers who are twins, who are at the top.
So I got that right as well, that two of the three brothers were older, but you're still not interested as to...
No, I'm really impressed. I just hit it.
At one point, I'm really hoping that you're just going to text me tomorrow and go, look, seriously, how the fuck did you know? I mean, it's like if David Blaine, you know those things where he makes like cards appear on tube trains and that? This is so far down the road of irrelevance compared to that. Just like a bloke going up to people in the street going, you got any brothers or sisters? They go, yeah, okay, three. You're the middle one. There you go.
But even better if you did that and people reacted like it was David Blaine doing the card trick. So like, whoa!
Fucking dude, like people with their heads on their hands on the temples of their
mind
heads.
Mind blown!
Shit. And then one lad in a hoodie just goes, he needs to go for a walk. You know when the young lads do that? Because they're just so blown. Like, fucking hell, mate. And then they walk quite far. You think, all right, mate, wasn't that good? My fuck you is to the admin involved in going on holiday. Now, you might think that if you go on holiday in the middle of a pandemic, because there are some people that still use the phrase middle of a pandemic, that there's going to be some admin. But my God, have you flown at all during these testing times?
Yeah, and I'm with you. The admin's horrible. It's so rubbish. And also because it's so hard just working out what you need and what you're allowed. You keep sending you to different links. And then I hadn't realised, I went to France and I came back and then you had to take a test before you left the country and then one when you came back, and it was all just boring and messy and you're not really sure if you're doing the right thing.
And also hard to work out how things cross-relate. So like the NHS thing, I mean, I probably, having had the jabs, I should have had the app already by now, but I still had the paper one, like some sort, like my dad would have had if he'd still been around.
Yeah, because that is exactly what my parents would do. We've printed it out.
Oh, there was a lot of printouts at the airport, because I sort of thought you've got to get it all done electronically, right? So now British Airways, they use this app called Verifly, which you can sort of do it all electronically in advance, so you don't have to go through the paperwork thing. And you think, Well, this, I'll feel so happy by the time I get to the airport because I've done the work in advance. I get the little QR codes. And trust me, all of this process was a bastard anyway, just working out how things related to that.
Yeah.
The truth of the matter is I think how stressed I was by the time I got to the airport, just being ready to be at the airport, I don't think it was fucking worth it. I would rather just printed off some stuff and just pushed it at some person behind the counter and gone, stuff, mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I can't, as you know, a conscientious father of a person and a husband, I can't set off to the airport with any doubt that I'll be able to get my family home.
No, isn't that horrible? You're like in charge of people. It's not just you. You've got to do horrible admin, and other people could be the fallout from you doing the admin role.
And that's the horrible. I mean, not to catastrophize, but the loss of respect forever from my son. Is that maybe forever?
Yeah. And years ago, my dad, he's not a man.
But this
failed
is
at the airport.
This is these things haunt me. You know why? Because he still remembers. There was once when he was three. His first memory is that I put a Dettol floor wipe down the toilet and got told off by mummy. Still brings it up. And also, so face masks. The fact that you still have to wear them on planes, I for all the pandemic, I wasn't a nose out prick.
Yeah, but have you become a nose out prick?
I have become a nose out prick.
No.
Do you know, it's my act of rebellion, because when you're on a plane, we all know deep down that the air is circulating and it makes no fucking difference whatsoever. So I made a calculation that the improvement to my well-being just from having the nose out, because it does change things. I don't know why. It just...
Yeah.
It is a lot better.
It's a long flight as well, isn't it? You just think, I'll just expose my nose a bit. Who's going to know? Who's going to see?
Well, you can, because you can always get away with it, can't you? Because they sort of say all that, and it's just a very quick thing. You've got your mask on your face. For the whole pandemic, I was kind of like, either don't wear them at all or wear them over your nose. I was like that. But I'm a nose out prick. I've become that guy.
Wow.
And it is mainly men, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah. I always remember the picture of Jeremy Corbyn. Do you remember the picture of Jeremy Corbyn with he was extremely nose out. He'd always wear a mask and people pounced on it, but it's a very defining image for me of the masks in the pandemic.
So you see, you people on the centre left of the Labour Party, you're obsessed with Corbyn. You got your win. Why can't you just leave the little deluded, stupid socialist alone? Okay, right, we're going to get into the first main subject, which is the lifting of restrictions. So, Rosie, I've just arrived back in Britain. Obviously, I wasn't at all on social media while I was out there, because that's what I promised my wife. What's happening? Where are we at?
I feel I should know better, but aren't they getting rid of all restrictions now? Isn't Boris saying we're done?
You're damn right, Rosie. I fooled you. I did know. I just wanted to hear you say it. We are. Hurrah. We are. No masks. No tests. No nothing.
I don't know if it's hurrah, Jeff. I'm gonna throw that out there. I'm not sure it's great.
What? You mean we have a slight disagreement, which might help with the tone of debate and provide entertainment? So, all right, well, let's go for it one by one. So probably the most controversial, I would argue, is the end of the need to stay at home if you test positive, right? So is that the one that makes you most uneasy?
Yeah, it does. It does a little. On the one hand, I think, I don't know, because I'm not completely on one side or the other here, but I do feel that it seems a bit crazy to me that if someone has COVID and they say, oh, you can go and work, you don't have to isolate anymore. It's so contagious that people are going to go to work and give it to everyone. I mean, that to me sounds to me a bit insane. I do think that, of course, we need to move on and we need to cut down on isolation. But the fact that there's now nothing sounds mad, I think.
When do you think, what would be the criteria, do you think, for moving to that then? What, in terms of numbers, what point in time would you think that would be feasible?
Oh, I don't know.
Be honest, is your brain going never?
Well, I don't, I, I don't know, because I'm also not going. I don't, you know, I think things do have to move on, and we can't stay where we are. But I know, for example, I've got you know, I've got a friend who is who's very ill, and for the whole of the pandemic, she's basically been in lockdown phase one for the last 2 years, and it's so miserable. And I just think of vulnerable people like that, and the idea of having no restrictions and nothing protecting them makes me nervous. I think that's it.
I think that it's totally, you know, fair to be worried on behalf of those people. I suppose there's been a lot. The moment that Omicron clearly didn't give a massive amount of fucks about what we did, in a way was liberating. Go, don't care about masks. Then you hear about people getting Omicron that hadn't really been out as well. So either they're liars, either they're liars with secret social lives. So
I think they're liars with secret social lives. I never heard about what people saying. I've just been sitting at home and I got it. Is that what was happening?
Well, that did seem to start happening. People that weren't out much at all, and then obviously the Queen's got it, and she's pretty well shielded.
Who's she hanging out with?
She's kind of like, you know, social distance. You can't touch her. You know, they know how old she is and stuff like that. So in a way, I think the way I sort of saw it was that Omicron, one was that it's a mild one and you get immunity, which just felt like a great supermarket special offer. All the immunity, none of the symptoms, and pay nothing till 2030. Like a sofa deal sort of level.
Do you get immunity, though? I mean,
I get some natural immunity.
But it only lasts for a bit, doesn't it? I've had COVID twice now. It's really annoying. Where's my immunity? I don't know.
But you've had,
different strains. I'm collecting them.
It does beg the question that if having it, if being triple jabbed and all this stuff isn't enough, that's my worry, is what, all right, what is the threshold then for things getting back totally back to normal? Because the argument at the beginning of last year was all like, get the vaccine, trust the science. And people really bought into that. It was a massively successful and a positive thing, I think. And then the problem is it does seem like a lot of the people that were pushing that line were then like, well, no, it's not. We go, well, that starts to seem like an anti-science.
I kind of mean, because also I think that a lot of the idea of lockdown, and I was very pro-lockdown, was because we hadn't had the vaccine yet. And it was like, well, we need to protect people because there's none of that protection. But we're in a different place now, because now, you know, as you say, people are triple jabbed and everything like that. And so there isn't the idea of going back into lockdown. Also, the idea of going back into lockdown anyway is just so horrific. I feel like we've so depressing.
I think we would see such a difference in human behaviour if there was a fourth one. I mean, literally like people daubing words and shit on their roofs and stuff. What most people think. What about ending of free tests? I'll be honest, right? The LFTs, there's a certain kind of person that became so much part of their routine. Like, LFT, got my keys, is the front door locked, do another LFT just because I might have caught COVID in the 2 minutes. What was so weird was it came from the same people that seemed to be going, well, 37 billion for tests and trace, and that was a joke. And then you go, I think you've done a billion worth of LFTs yourself this year. So the free tests, right? I find it weird that I would have thought that they would still be free to the vulnerable and over 80s. I mean, a lot of this stuff is being decided today and tonight while we're talking. So by the time this goes up, it will be decided. What about that? Do you know, I mean, have you gone a bit LFT happy? Have you gone a bit?
I have, my flatmate has. So there's always there's always loads of tests everywhere.
Yeah.
Which is useful. But yeah, it is. I mean, it's funny anyway, like just normal people, how they've kind of reacted to the pandemic and how different people are. Meet certain friends and they go, no, I can't. We can't go in there. We have to go somewhere where there's sort of two chairs apart. And then I had this thing where I was meeting two friends and the other one was like, what's wrong with you? It's fine. Get over yourself. And there was this weird aggression on both sides that I thought, is that completely now part of our life where people are just aggressive about their particular stances, even if it's not, you know, about wearing a mask or not, even if it's kind of on a lower level on just what you're comfortable with. think.
Yeah, I do think it drew that side out in people. I think that the issues that the people that were like, oh, I'll just get on with it, that appeals to me more. But just because it involves public life and a social life, that's my...
Yeah.
That you sort of go, well, are they more fun as people? Maybe not, but their decision involves the possibility of fun.
Yeah.
It doesn't kind of rule it out. I mean, I suppose what it's brought out for all of us, it's leached it out from under the surface, like one of these, like these suction candle cup things that you get at the progressive treatment centre that get all your toxins out, right? What's brought to the surface is how we feel about risk, generally, I think. If you go from risk aversion, this is another format point today we're doing with the male years. You go from naught is you don't give a shit about anything, okay? No mask, no test, you're just complete libertarian. To 10, you're double masked and you're LFTing on the way from the kitchen to the bathroom and back again.
Yeah, and you're saying, oh, sorry, are you coming round? Can you do a test, please, before you...
Yeah, I just prefer it if you did.
Another one before you... Oh, don't know, wait, hang on, don't hug me yet. Can you just go in the other room and... Do an LFT. Have you had that? I've had that.
If you cough, I will put you in a fucking headlock and throw you out of my house.
I'm sorry. I'll try and not be too aggressive with it, but I do have to follow the rules and I will have to throw you out.
And you are trying to kill my family.
My granny is upstairs. She is coming down later.
Why do you hate granny? What has she done to you? Yeah, I mean, so we got that person at number 10. I already know who's annoyed me most out of these two things, but that's my view. Where are you in that? Pick a point on that.
I'd say I'm in, because I also find the people who are like, no mask, fuck it all, I find them really irritating as well. Mm. It's just inconsiderate and rude. I mean, there are people who are so nervous about it. Just put a piece of cloth on your face. It's fine. I think I'm probably in the middle. Or no, I'm like, what? I'm like 7. I reckon I'm 7.
7? Oh, that's more towards the crazy woman than I thought.
I don't know. Now I'm doubting myself. 6.5. No, 7. 7, 6.8.
See, well, I would go probably a 4 in the other direction.
Yeah.
So not as rock and roll as I'd like to think of myself as. I mean, like in the first lockdown, I'm going to be a fucking rebel. I'm going to admit that I broke a couple of rules, all right? Okay. I hereby, in the language of the anti-vaxxers, I hereby absolve Rosie Holt from any legal responsibility therein for the revelations for which I'm about to discloseth. Because they always do weird Shakespearean English.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll say it. During the first lockdown, I sometimes took the dog out for a second walk.
Yeah, I think that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, but I also do want to kill people's grandparents. So that's my problem, is that if once they found out that about me...
Then they go, oh, but he also wants to kill the old people.
Yeah, and also the fact that the dog was alight and burning COVID like an incense thing around the housing
estate. Yeah, that makes it a problematic dog.
A dead dog in many ways. I mean, in terms of the mask, so I was doing a bit of research. I mean, it's the first thing I've ever researched for this show. But a professor of medicine at Oxford University says masks didn't really help with Omicron, right? And while they probably reduced transmission, okay, it feels like that did help then, they could not prevent it. I've always felt with masks, right, and it's been a very weird thing that we've never actually come to a definitive answer of, does thing on face stop thing getting out of mouth, right? Which you'd think that it would, instinctively, but... I've always thought that if you're in a space with people for any more than about 10 minutes, it's pretty fucking pointless.
I know. I think if you're, but it feels like that. I mean, that's why you kind of got this crazy rule. If you go into, there was that point when you go into bars and you'd have to wear a mask until you were sitting down at a table, and that feels a bit fruitless, but. Yeah, I know what you mean. I think, but I think I also think maybe that's why I got COVID the second time, because I went to a bar and I was like, "That's fine. I've been here now for a few minutes."
You're being too hard on yourself. I think the hangover mixed with a general sense of self-reproach. Here's something that I would say to you that you might not like. Okay, so you are obviously you hate Boris. I mean, we probably share a view that he shouldn't be prime minister.
Yeah,
we can start from that point. not a lover of Brexit.
No.
Not in a big way. Not
not in a small way either.
But I know the Remainers love to say that we're a laughing stock, right? They sort of go to BDSM clubs where people just reassure each other that we're a laughing stock all around the world. Every day, people get up all around the world and they schedule in a bit of laughing at Britain.
That's all we do. We schedule it in.
They just, from France to Haiti, they get up and go, oh yeah, Britain's a mess. And then they laugh for a minimum of 15 minutes. Well,
how did you know?
Well, I know that Remainers do need to think this. It's part of how they get up in the morning.
It's how we work.
And, you know, the country's gone to the dogs. I despair is another one. Despairing is words that conservatives used to say when I was a kid now. Weirdly, the liberal left have really taken... Well, I was out of the country last week and I met and spoke with people from a lot of countries and I don't think we are as much of a laughing stock anymore because of the COVID thing.
Because
of how we're ending it. You see, so at the beginning, a lot of things wrong with COVID. Vaccination rollout, very good. Yes, also NHS, but overall good. And then first out, a lot of people seemed quite jealous of what Britain is doing.
Yeah. What, because we, well, yeah, I don't know, maybe. They're like, they've escaped, they're free from COVID. It's all plain sailing for them now.
They seem to think, I spoke to people from lots of different places and almost all of them on some level were, and bear in mind, they're people roughly of my age who were also on holiday. So quite clearly, sample size, not, you know, people like, they're not people like me politically, but they were also people who had left the country whilst the pandemic was still technically happening. And yeah, they just seemed to think it was a good thing. They didn't seem as exercised about Partygate as I thought I might find them.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Because you do kind of think, don't you, when you think the whole world are laughing at us. They're all laughing.
All right, let's go here another one. This is really tense. People can feel this anger. One of us is on the verge of storming off, I think. But is Brexit a disaster?
I'm worried now because I feel like you're going to press me on things about Brexit.
I just thought it'd be fun. With two people that aren't looking to be dicks to each other, I thought it'd be interesting to have this chat.
It seems to me to be quite disastrous. Yes, I think so. I think there are things about it which... But I don't know. There's just... Yeah, it seems to me to be a disaster. I'm not even going to expand on that.
It's what... Because I've seen the word disaster, especially of the last 6 months. You know, the kind of was Brexit a bad idea thing goes up and down. So last year when the EU were shit in the bed, it went down and actually people thought we were right to leave the EU. It's fair to say there's been a long period where there's quite a clear majority that now think it was the wrong decision. But what I wonder is, what are the disastrous things? Because some of the stuff that we felt, as usual being British, it was only happening to us, like supply line things turned out is happening in America. Inflation turns out we're not even close to being the worst in Europe. What, like, the amount of admin that businesses have got, I would agree, is disastrous. But I suppose what I'm getting at is if the long run thing is to say it has been a disaster and at some point we rejoin, what are those things? And is it, this is a really poor argument from a Brexiteer, is the disaster as disastrous as was predicted? So, i.e., you might have a point, but it's not as bad as what they were saying before. They were saying we'd all be eating pigeon, there'd be no medicine. Well, it just turns out we've got loads of fucking admin.
You thought it'd be apocalyptic. Actually, it's just loads of paperwork forever and ever.
Yeah. I mean, what I've come to realise, and in the process of trying to be more conciliatory, is that for people to not be able to live and work in Europe easily, that is a big... It's a huge thing, right? That to me, of all things, is the most compelling thing. When people mention that, I sort of shut the fuck up, you know. But like, you still can go to Europe and stuff. And, I mean, what will be interesting, right, this might be a pressure point, is when we have those first big passport queues in Spain.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the most British people will regret voting for Brexit?
Yeah, it'll be the long queues.
It'll be long...
I mean, it's not just that, though, is it? I've got a friend who is engaged to be married to an Italian, and they've had a nightmare because of, and they couldn't get over how difficult it was, and their immigration lawyer was like, I don't think people realise how much Brexit has changed things in cases like this. So she's ended up going to live in Italy because it just couldn't work with him living over here. He wouldn't be able to work, and they'd have to get a spousal visa, which runs out after a few years. So there's all these kind of extra things which just seem to make life a lot more difficult and complicated for people. And then, and that's not even talking about kind of the bigger scale, like the fish. don't forget the fish, Jeff.
Well, I think we all claim to be more concerned about fish at various times than we actually were. So with Brexiteers, it was in the run-up, we were like, we need our fish back, give us the fish. And then when the deal was clearly not very good on that front, then Remainers were like, well, the fish are fucked. And suddenly they cared about fish.
I care about the fish.
So you're currently pro-fish.
I am really pro-fish, yeah.
Well, I think maybe one of the reasons that the feeling of disaster, does it also perhaps come from the fact that the government, during the time that some of this stuff has happened, is that we also have chaotic figures at the heart of government. So it feels disastrous, right?
Well, also it doesn't help, does it, that Boris basically, for ages before we had Boris in power, there was this sort of fear, what kind of deal are we going to get? Are we going to have a hard Brexit or a soft Brexit? Is there going to be no deal? And then I think Boris sort of bulldozed ahead, and in one way people were going, oh, he got Brexit done. But there's a lot of worry about how he got Brexit done. Has he got it done by just bypassing a lot of the problems and making things, a lot worse? I'm really noticing when I say now.
I think we've had a little Brexit chat there and we didn't end up hating each other. I think that's quite an achievement. So I was sort of thinking, before that happened, maybe just take the win.
Yeah.
And go and say that Brexit is actually all right. So moving on. So we're going to talk about Canada, perhaps. I think I've only really got one point to make about Canada. While I was away, I mean, fucking what's happened there? It's gone full Hunger Games, isn't it?
It's gone really mad. I think also, do you know what's interesting is I wasn't, because I think sometimes you have to be careful, don't you, when you, the kind of political groups you're sort of, you lean towards. So obviously I'm left leaning. And if you're not reading about it, you kind of make assumptions based on what people are tweeting on your side. And then it was only when I was kind of, so I was thinking, oh, well, you've got these anti-vaxxer truckers and whatever. And then you sort of, I was reading about it over the weekend, and you go, actually, this is really quite worrying and bad. And what's Trudeau up to? And there's a weird idea of I don't know how are we ignoring the fact that this is happening on the left because we don't agree with the anti-vaxxers? Like, they're still having their rights taken away, right? It's just,
well, let's change. Say the truckers were not largely fat men. If they weren't fat, kind of white guys of a certain age and were just funky young people, like, does that affect what we think is happening here? Because we're now very used to thinking of predominantly white men in their mid-50s being right-wing and malevolent in intent and stuff like that. And you're right, in a way. Like, I've no doubt that there are far-right elements somewhere in this, QAnon-y type people. But the scale of incursion into civil liberties there is so profound that I think it's very easy, isn't it, if you're a government to just go, like he did. I mean, he did that thing that Hillary did, was basically saying, these Trump guys,
kind of said they're deplorables. They're,
and that just never works. It's like saying Brexit voters, stupid and racist, Tory voters, selfish and evil. Like, and it happens with the left too. Just dismiss people as fucking do-gooders. You know, it alienates people and entrenches them in their positions. And he did it. Whenever I look at him, I think it reminds me of something that we will know working in entertainment, is that the more liberal and good-looking a man is, the more dangerous he is, right?
I think you're right in a way. But I think people give him a lot of, because it's a surprise, right? When you go, hang on, I'm not sure what he's doing is above board. You go, he's got such a nice face.
How can the fucking, drummer from NSYNC, and I know they didn't have a drummer, but that is who he would be if there was a position in the band, the drummer from NSYNC be sort of instituting the world's first woke dictatorship. How has that happened? And he's just pleading it. I'm like, when he's under pressure, he just sort of says, like, it's anti-feminist. You know, like, he's a bit, then he goes a bit David Brent, like, this transphobic, like, sorry, Justin, okay, I'm going to take it that the Ottawa truckers, whatever they are, aren't currently focusing too squarely on the trans issues.
Yeah, yeah, it's just sort of attaching, that. I think that was when he, I can't remember the exact words he used, but he basically said sort of anti-Semitic, transphobic, homophobic.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of attaching loads of buzzwords to kind of defend, when you're going, that's not, that, why are you trying to put all the bad things together and going, that's what the truckers are?
He was sort of dropping insults. So I remember when I first started doing Mash Report, like, people basically thought, this guy, I don't want him anywhere near this. So what I'll do is I'll just say loads of words that should get someone off air. So, like, yeah, you know, so they would say, like, racist, transphobic, like, misogynistic. And they just go through, and the way that that Trudeau says these things, this kind of puppy dog expression, like, these are bad people. You're like, you're a prime minister. These are nuanced issues, you know. I mean, not obviously in terms of race, but in terms of, like, civil liberties. There is a far right mandate element in there somewhere. They have tried to kind of coin, you know, in a kind of aping the Trump thing of make Canada great again. I'm going to say, of all the great agains, that's the worst I've heard. Make Canada great at last. Make Canada great for a laugh. See if it's possible to make Canada great.
I did really like your tweet this morning about how you never thought it would come from Canada.
Yeah, be honest. In the sweepstake of who's going to be a bit Hunger Games, no one had Canada. But being Twitter, of course, and this is where I'm happy to criticise men, I had loads of guys, it's actually quite funny, they're going, sorry, if it was a sweepstake, then you wouldn't actually choose what you had. And just, oh, fucking hell, lads. So just a quick hype here. We've got a few more Patreons there. Keenan Bryan, who just sounds good looking. I don't know why. That's a really good looking name.
Do you know what? I felt that as soon as you said it.
Good looking, Keen. James McConnon. I mean, if they're going out on the pool together as two lads, could I be a third wingman of playing with three wings? Does it work? I'd still go. But I'll be the tail. Just in a lot of situations.
What does that involve?
I think it was sexual. I think I was realising that.
Okay, great, cool.
I was like, we don't even need girls to come over, right? Oscar Kappel Beeble. I just don't think that's a real name, I have to say. Oscar Kappel Beeble. That sounds like a fucking, you know, on planes where, you know, like the thing, Oscar Kappel Beeble. Like, that. Is that your call sign? Are you in a fucking Spitfire pilot or something?
Or it sounds like someone who's trying to think of a made-up name on the spot and panics halfway through.
Oscar Kappel Beeble.
They've got Oscar Kappel Beeble.
Yeah, just random name generator.
Yeah.
Oscar Kappel, well, OKK. I mean, if it was like, if the first name began with a K there, I think maybe I was being funded from dark means. But maybe that's what this is. Maybe these are all made up names and I'm actually being funded by Russia. But just
well,
actually,
Russia's not all bad, you see.
Well, just as a point, actually, they have got a point about NATO. Fraser Beatty, but we should bomb them. Fraser Beatty, you're nice, Fraser. I imagine a bit stooped, Fraser.
Why is he stooped?
Because he's just so nice. He's like your man, Chris Piney.
No.
Whiny
he's
Piney.
He's like really tall people who kind of like bend down to accommodate.
Do you know what? In the rom-com, so you know when Whiny Piney goes back to being whiny, and he used the central character, Fraser Beatty, suddenly he stands up to his full thing and you go...
He swoops in and I go, oh, he was there all along. I just didn't see him because he was stooped so low.
Yeah, like he's now the modern equivalent of the girl who shakes her hair loose. He stands up to his full height and, you get married. And then it has one of those montages at the end where it shows them with kids. Always on the fucking sand, though, aren't they? The mum and the dad and then the little kid.
They're always on the sand, yeah.
Do you know what they should do? And then they should go really dark, like they should show like their life through the kids, but then they should show it going bad again, and then maybe like one of the parents like taking drugs or something, and like
no.
but while all the happy music is playing at the end of film montage, and some people are just leaving the cinema going, so, have you seen what's happening with this fucking end of credits montage? It's got really dark there. Oh, she's dead. Oh, Jesus. So the tour goes to Wellingborough on the 9th of March. That's a Wednesday, Wellingborough in Northamptonshire. 11th of March, I'm in Taunton. 12th, still down in the West Country in Plymouth. Then the 19th of March, I'm at New Brighton, which is basically basically Liverpool. It's all the fucking same, isn't it? Let's be honest. 26th is Lincoln. The 27th of March, I'm in Huddersfield. Then the 2nd of April, I'm in Portsmouth at the New Theatre Royal. 7th of May, I'm in Ipswich. And then there's the new dates in May. Spalding, Huntingdon, Glasgow. And then the absolute big one at the end. New Wimbledon Theatre, the Mecca. You see, Rosie, you know, all these comics with their fucking Apollo. Oh, I'm doing a day of the Apollo or the fucking Bloomsbury arsewipe. I'm going to the new Wimbledon Theatre.
Yeah, new Wimbledon Theatre.
On a Sunday. Yeah, where all the greats, all the Christopher Biggins and Shane Ritchie most recently. So, Rosie, we touched briefly there about what's been happening with your comedy. So when we first spoke to you, you'd had these breakout hits and all, you know, like they were doing, and the numbers continued to do incredible numbers, even bigger than before. But one thing I think that's worth sort of sharing with people who aren't already aware is how some of them have now started to fall MPs. So could you just give us a quick kind of catch up on what's happened with some of your recent clips?
Yeah, so before Christmas, I started doing, I think when Partygate was happening, I started doing these videos where I kind of spliced together interviews with politicians. But so I'd keep whoever was doing the interviews, and I'd just put myself in there being the MP. And a lot of people would think it was real and get very exercised about this awful MP who was just, and the MP would sort of be one of those MPs that you see who kind of is trying to, knows they're talking rubbish but will defend anything. So,
yeah.
So sort of saying, you know, and I can't possibly say whether I was at the party until Sue Gray tells me, otherwise how will I know? But yeah, I got some MP. I put up one 2 weeks ago, and I had an MP from Labour and one from SNP who both quote tweeted it saying, this MP is outrageous.
Well, I mean, that's interesting because you're doing like basically what a satirist should. There is like you are lampooning these MPs, which at the height of Partygate were having to say some ridiculous things. You know,
yeah.
Well, they didn't have to, but they chose to. And then you've got, you know, left-wing MPs that are so kind of hungry to believe that the Tories... This is what I think the left sometimes do. It's like, let the Tories be as bad as they're being, but then you get this overreach where they could actually credit that you were a real politician.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was just so ridiculous. And also because that particular video ended up with me going, this rat isn't going anywhere. And I thought, I mean, the fact that they were watching that going, this terrible MP saying this, referring herself as a rat who won't leave the sinking ship. It's just, it's extraordinary that, it's as you say, it's kind of this eagerness to join on the bandwagon and show yourself to be on the right side. And then, you know, a few people comment saying, oh no, she's a comedian. And then they just delete the tweet.
It's so embarrassing, so, isn't it?
It's like just at least they can acknowledge it. Well, I was going to say, I mean, a lot of people made fun of the, I did this one about a month ago that an ex Richard Bolton, why have I suddenly forgotten his name? Is that him? The ex UKIP leader.
Henry Bolton.
Henry Bolton, yeah. And then a lot of people, is it Henry Bolton? Yeah. But a lot of people kind of, you know, mocked him for thinking it was real. But then at least he kind of kept it up, which I kind of respected. Because a lot of other figures who kind of get on the left to get caught out, they'll just delete it. And on the right. But he sort of at least sort of went, oh yeah, I thought it was real. And he just kept...
But then you could just say, surely you just say, well, look, yeah, obviously I thought it was real because that's the kind of nonsense that we're being fed.
Yeah.
On a daily basis, you know, but fair play to Rosie. I see even Nadine Dorries tipped her hat to you and made a slightly jokey aside comment to you.
Yeah, I didn't know how to respond to that.
So what did she say? Just explain to us what she said.
I just did a stupid... Because people kept tagging me in videos of her. And so I just tweeted myself in a blonde wig going, oh yeah, surprise, I am Nadine Dorries or something along those lines.
So they're tweeting then, you to say, oh look, this character that you do, what's happening in real life, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then she said...
She responded with something like, oh, Rosie, you'll have to work a bit harder to look 65 or something. It's quite a nice tweet.
It was a nice tweet, but she's also going, I'm 65 and I look like this.
Yeah, you're right.
She does look well for 65. I mean, you do wonder sometimes, I mean, that bizarre interview that she had with Krishnan and Guru Murphy, you go,
yeah.
You know, they used to say that Trump would do weird stuff just to pull focus. You go, she must know that this is going so strangely.
She is, that's the thing. I think she's kind of, you know, when people say, oh, you should parody her, I think she's too far. You can't really, because she's like a comedy character. She is a comedy character, really. You can't really do anything more with her. Do you know what I mean?
No, I think you're right. And I think that the Tory MPs, I think the funniest Tory MP for a while has been Helen Whateley, who's been sort of somehow overpromoted and then moved back again. But she just looked to me like, how the fuck have I found myself in this job? You know, when she was on GMB getting ripped apart by Piers Morgan and stuff like that. Just that to me is like, that's a good comic character, because she just regrets.
Completely.
She regrets being everywhere. But Nadine Dorries, I'd imagine, is happy to be spoken about.
Yeah, completely. She is, and she just always bats back. I mean, I miss the days of Matt Hancock.
Don't we all?
Do you know, Jeff, I have a real soft spot for him. I know. Yeah. I think he's a dreadful politician, but I think he's just so socially awkward and inept, and also at sort of the height of COVID, and it was like they were wheeling him out to sort of defend the government policies, and he never looked like he believed what he was saying at all.
I hear you. I would say he didn't need much wheeling, from what I've heard. He likes to be wheeled, and I think.
Well, all the photo shoots would probably support your theory there.
But he was what my mum would have described as a pillock, like not a guy that you hate,
yeah,
but just kind of really wants to be liked. I mean, and I would imagine, like, you know, the old ass grab thing. I mean, it literally said to you, you know, everything you thought about Matt Hancock, you're correct in every single thing that you thought. He probably never even copped hold of a girl till he was 18. And so he's just having power and it's just intoxicating to him.
And
you know, he went out with a bit of respect. You know, I mean, he shouldn't have cheated on his wife.
Did he go out with respect?
I mean, just from blokes, you're going, all right, look, he is a pillock, shouldn't have cheated on his wife, but he's done all right there. You know, she's quite a good-looking woman. What was she thinking is the main point, really, if we're honest.
I don't know. What was she
thinking? Like, it's one of those ones where, you know, when she's with her female mates and she's trying to, like, go, yeah, but seriously, you get in a room with him, and all her mates going, no. Okay, don't try and pull the if you're in their company shit, mate. All right? He's a pillar. We got time. Sorry, I've kept you for much longer than I should have here.
No, that's fine.
This is. Well, he hasn't put his name here. It was Dan, I think. Dan from Luton. So he was responding to something I said about there was a guy whose wife wanted to have a boob job the other week, and he sent in a letter, and he said at first that he said, no, they're perfect, and oh, they've seen a lot of action, and we've seen it together. He used all sorts of phrases that I'm surprised he didn't get a slap, but he got away with it. And then she went off the idea. And then he suddenly thought, actually, I think she should. So he was trying. I just said, you cannot go back on that.
No.
So this is Dan from Luton, who says, it pisses me off that there are double standards. He's referring back to this. Like, you have to say her body, her choice, but also that she doesn't need it. Like, you have to say both of those. He goes, but you can't be honest or go, A, why are you so shallow? Or B, you probably could do with a touch-up. I mean, all right, it's brutal the way that he's put it. I do think that the shallowness, I mean, he sounds to me like Dan has written that after 2.5 cans of Holston. He's just gone, it pisses me off about how you know, because grammatically I've tried to tie this up. He's right on one level that you go her body, her choice, but you have to sort of basically allow for both outcomes, as though you feel exactly the same about both of them.
What, and that is like your body, your choice, but you've got to agree with whatever they do with it. But that's fine, right? That's
no, but you also have to say that she doesn't need it. So if a woman says she's thinking about plastic surgery, you have to simultaneously say
you don't need it. But also, if you want to do it, then that's your choice.
Yeah, but he's sort of saying if it's about. Why can't he just, I mean, the shallowness thing, why are you so shallow? Imagine if that was the first response you got off your fella and you was going, I was just thinking a bit of the, why are you so shallow? Whoa, fuck in hell. Yeah, I would say don't say any of that.
No, I think he shouldn't. Sorry, my word was so funny. I don't think Dan should say anything to any women.
No, you shouldn't speak much. You probably could do with a touch-up. I think there is a real issue with both these men and talk about women as like cars needing a sort of new paint job. Perhaps, you know, maybe just do a bit of the old Hugh Grant, you know, fumble over a couple of words, go, well, you know, on the, you know, and you can get most things out that way, but don't say shallow or touch-up.
No, definitely not.
Definitely
just go,
not.
You just go, you look great.
But why this? But this is the problem, isn't it? You go, no, you have to either say something really positive about how she looks, or that she can do whatever the fuck she wants. Fuck it, I'm with Dan. You say it, bro.
No, you say you look great, and then if they go away and get a load of surgery, you say you look great. You still look great.
Oh no! Or what about like when she comes home? Then you go, you can have surgery, but when you come back, I will react very honestly to how you look that day.
That's terrifying. But
so she comes in and goes, oh my God, you look like you've been abducted by aliens. So that's the deal. You have what you, yeah, your body, your choice.
But my word's my choice.
My words, you could be a leader for the Meninism movement with phrases like that, Rosie. But when you come back, I will say the first sentence that's in my brain. Yeah, do that, Dan. Keep me and Rosie.
Don't do that, Dan.
In terms of, we spoke about your clips. How can people see your clips and show appreciation? Let's be honest. Fucking pay, this is, you know, I'm centre right. Fucking pay you for this content. Jesus. Pay the woman.
Well, pay me some money.
Yeah.
I have a Ko-fi account, which is basically like, I remember you saying last time that Ko-fi was like the female version of Patreon, which I think is...
Too cautious, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I've got a Ko-fi account. Put money in there, please. And then I always get people underneath going, stop begging for money. And I go, that's fine, just keep putting in the coins.
It is weird, isn't it? Like, it's another example of some of the double standards in comedy about women is that a lot of blokes do Patreon for whatever. And that is just a more formalised form of monthly... It's basically direct debit begging.
Yeah.
But if you do it on an occasional basis, well, no, I think that your clips are amazing, and I hope that all the people, you know, even a decent percentage of the people that are enjoying them give you a bit of a wedge, then that it seems fair and moral. And thanks very much for being on the show, Rosie Holt.
Thank you very much for having me. What must people think?